Well, thank you guys so much for improvising that set with me.
Thank you for having us. This was a blast.
And now this is like a part two where we can kind of get nerdy about musical improv.
Something we do often alone, so it's nice to have another person to do it with.
Yes, exactly. I imagine the initial feedback, you know, all I have is like the play counts for how people are listening, and I see about the same amount of people listening to these as watching the episode.
Wow, so it's a bunch of nerds.
So, yeah, I have to assume it's a bunch of nerds listening to the pod on the whole who also are interested in musical improv and either doing it or like learning more about it. So, first, I wanted to ask you guys what each of your start was to get into musical improv. Like, what's your like brief history of how you came to be here?
Cool. Wanna go first?
Yeah, sure. I started doing like regular improv in like early 2010s in New York, and sort of at the time was just really focusing on like regular improv. And then I was also still am a composer, musician, a little bit of everything. And so when I started, I feel like in New York, musical improv like existed in very small ways, and then it sort of had a fun, I don't know, not even a resurgence because it was happening a lot, but I feel like we got more involved in like 2013, 2014.
I also feel like around that time also like the Magnet really took off as an educational place and also as like a place for performing musical improv, which buoyed the whole scene in New York, I feel.
So I think like part of it was just being like, oh, I love regular improv, I love music, I can use all these skills together. And also, I went to acting school, which I was going to say I wouldn't recommend. No, I would recommend you do whatever you want to do.
Live your life.
But I kind of like always dreamed and wished that I went to musical theater school. And so musical improv was like a very fun way to sort of let loose the like musical theater kid in me and be able to just like be a little bit more joyful and a little bit more.
I love that you simultaneously had the instinct to say don't go to acting school while having the regret of not doing the more fanciful thing of going to
the worst one, musical.
You know, you should do whatever you want. Everyone should do whatever they want.
I did go to school for musical theater, which is why I am allowed to say that it's... That to be like, don't get a degree. But honestly, get a degree. Do what you want. Then I went to New York and started auditioning for musical theater and took that very seriously for a while and didn't really enjoy it, which was a shock to me because I have always been a real type A student and very much believed that you excel at what you put time into, and wasn't enjoying putting time into musical theater professionally, which shocked me because it had been my greatest passion for such a long time, which led me to improv. So then I started taking classes at UCB. I immediately loved it more than anything I'd ever loved in my entire life. And then I think in the year 2016, it might have been 2015, UCB would do something called like advanced study classes, which is that like if you had finished their original curriculum, there were specialized classes that were the teachers would choose who was in the class.
And it was like very specialized focuses. So it'd be like a form you're going to all work on together or a genre or...
Right, a genre, form, the improvised play, like something like that. It wasn't just like, oh, here's another improv class. It was like, let's do this specifically. And for the first time ever, someone was going to teach a musical improv class at UCB. And I was like very deep into the UCB system at that time. I don't know if I was on Lloyd Knight yet. I might have been. I can't really remember. But either way, I always like joke that I feel like a company man for UCB. Like there were all these other schools and I didn't really take classes at any other place. Like I was like, UCB or die.
I took classes at Magnet before I did UCB.
Right.
I feel like we also need to like shout out every great accompanist and teacher just for like people who are listening from maybe not just Los Angeles.
The New York scene is phenomenal and had a lot of great people really take it from not very much to a lot.
Yeah.
And so the person who taught this advanced study class in New York was named Amber Petty, and Eric Gerson was the accompanist. And I applied for this because I wanted to do it so badly, but part of the questions that were like asked when you applied was like, have you ever taken a musical improv class before? We're hoping to get people of like 201 level or higher. And I just lied. I was like, I'll figure it out when I get there. There's no way I won't be able to figure this out when I get there. So I was like, yes, of course I've taken musical improv. I've been taking musical improv forever. And then we showed up on our first day, and the way we warmed up was we did solo spot songs alone. And I was like, oh, I can't believe I lied. I have to like go improvise an entire song by myself right now, and I have no skill set for this. But the adrenaline of that actually made me like even more obsessed with it. And that class was so special. It's one of my favorite classes I've ever taken. Those shows that we did are some of my favorite shows I've ever done. It like hooked me on musical improv immediately. And then I've been doing it pretty religiously since that class that I lied my way into.
Yeah. I think I did like the next version of it like a year later with Eric. And similarly, like I did that and then got invited to sit in with like a really long running indie team called Good Catch that was like the third generation of the team. And I like got invited to do it. And then that became kind of like my musical improv outlet for the rest of the time in New York, basically.
Yeah. It sounds like a common thread between both of you is you kind of you showed up to this thing and then got thrown into the deep end of it in a good way.
Isn't it fun, though, sometimes? Not always, but like you can't live your entire life being thrown into the deep end. I think your heart will give out on you. But sometimes it is really nice to be like, I think I have a skill in this, or at least I have an interest. And then just like not being like, oh, let's wade into the kiddie pool and see, of just being like, you want to make up a song? Why don't you make one up right now, alone, in front of everybody? Because it made me immediately obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Like, it felt so dangerous.
It presses both on the adrenaline of discomfort, but also the reward of success.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, which is like the duo.
That's the fine balance that I think we try to strike.
It's what all adrenaline seekers are, you know. Yeah. If you didn't actually land safely after jumping from the plane,
right?
You'd be like, yeah, that's no fun. Yeah.
But also, like, the thing that I was so immediately taken by with musical improv was in that class, I had a lot of great improvisers who were very goofy and like took big swings. And the class often felt like very ridiculous, but in a very like principled way. Like, we were like principled disciples of ridiculousness. And it made me realize again how much I was missing that in musical theater. When I was having a really difficult time putting into words like what was so frustrating to me about musical, about like auditioning for musicals and things, it was that I never got to truly be as silly and as funny as I like wanted to be. I think a lot
because
of musicals,
the material wasn't that silly or funny.
I think a lot of musicals are funny, but largely they're pretty funny for men. It's a lot harder to find shows that are like where women get to like balls to the wall, go nuts. I feel like right now we have Death Becomes Her, which is incredible. One of the funniest shows I've ever seen, and has two female leads being as funny as they want to be. I can't think of an example.
Not like funny. It's like unhinged, real, like comedic.
I'm having a hard time thinking of like other times like women have gotten to like helm a show.
Besides like Madeline Kahn in movies, basically.
Madeline Kahn in On the 20th Century, but that was a bad experience for her. We don't have to get into this. Mm. But yes, so like I would do shows like that and be like, why don't I ever get to play a person who eats a pastrami sandwich at the Cat's Delicatessen? And like, you know what I mean? Like that never happens in musicals. I never got that chance to do it. And so like the more I got to do it in musical improv, the happier I was and the more emboldened I felt to play really big and really silly, mm-hmm. which is like now how I think I play. Like I play very big and very silly. But
This
is a big silly set.
Yeah, I was thinking about... before we move on to the set and talking about that a little bit, I, for the benefit of any listener who might be LA based as, or just not New York based, is there anything else you want to say about like that scene, the 10 years you guys were doing improv in New York or musical improv in New York?
I feel like I'm only talking from a smaller perspective because at the same time that I'm saying this, at the Magnet Theater, there was
eight teams,
but some weekend teams. They had like a really...
They had a program called Musical Megawatt, and it was like their house. It was like the Herald Night
Music
of
Night
Music.
Musical house teams. And then they would like graduate teams, and like there would be like weekend teams. And UCB didn't have anything like that.
Yeah,
there
that's was a one really team. Big... We're just starting to get there, maybe a little bit now.
Yes, I took over in a team called Rumpelteazer, which was UCB's one and only musical team.
Right.
It's also funny enough for people who are like real nerds of this. We're getting real in the weeds here. Ashley Ward was one of the original members of that team. And I used to see her in shows and it was like, oh my God, like what a genius. So when we moved here, we both took a class with Ashley.
Yeah. And that immediately got us into like the scene. And now all of
Ashley's
our friends and collaborators
and she's
are
just so
from
smart. I was like, I don't even care if I'm basically taking a 101 class. Like I will learn something new from her somehow. Do you know what I mean? Like she's just wonderful.
What I would say also is just like the indie musical improv scene right now is great and it's so fun.
Here?
Here.
Yeah.
And just like it feels very different, which is not a bad thing or a value judgment. It's just like there's sort of a nice vibe here where it feels celebratory for the form.
Yeah.
That
was also like an experience I never really got to have was a musical indie scene because... huge shout out to Rumpelteazer, which still runs in New York. That was a team I was on for years and grew so much and loved them so much. Some of the best shows of my life were on Rumpelteazer. A huge shout out to Eric Gerson, who put together that team, then MD'd it. one of the best accompanists in the game, I think. He's like playing right now a lot for the off-book tours on the East Coast. He's just wonderful. I learned so much from that team. But that was like we had Monday nights at UCB, and there wasn't really an indie scene around it.
No. Was it a popular show? Was it full?
Yes,
it was.
Rumble Teaser was popular. But also, it didn't have much competition. Like, if you wanted to see musical improv at UCB, like, it was like...
You saw them.
You saw Rumble Teaser.
Yeah.
They also won Cage Match a lot, which, to all regular improvisers' chagrin.
Yeah, exactly. Often Cage
like
Match
when,
winners. Yeah.
Yeah, the theater kid would be the valedictorian, and everyone's like, oh,
shut
fuck
up.
Off.
But what I like so much now about being in LA is the frequency of the indie scene, but also the supportiveness, which I actually is not something I ever got to experience. And I love it. I love being around musical improv, and I love when people are doing like their first show ever, or like a team is trying out their first thing or a new form. And it's like, I have found that to be so rewarding. And I was very fortunate to join a team out here that hosts a show called Musical Improv is Cool Again, and they're the host team slot, but there's always two teams before it, and sometimes those teams are very veteran teams, but sometimes they're like mashups of people who've never met, and sometimes they're people who are like, this is our first show together, we've been practicing, but like the nerves, like, ah, first show. I didn't know how much I like wanted that in my life, like that, like I feel like I take that very seriously, where it's like, this is a sacred space for us to like try stuff and like be silly in a safe way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I love that.
Aw. Okay, cool. Let's talk. Get nerdy about the set. We can do a little like 2020. I sometimes wish after I watched a set of if I liked the set that I could be like, what was, you know, what? I often wish I could ask like, what did you feel good about? Where were you like stuck? If you could go back and do it different, what like would you make any moves? Some people get really in their head about going back on their sets. So we don't like if that's a way that you feel where you're like, I don't want to think about a set I already did. We don't have to. It's more like for the benefit of the listener of like, and also sometimes I'm like, this is a bit like watching sports playback.
Yeah.
Of, oh, I should.
They're like, oh, I should have run left, but he went right.
Yeah, I pivoted and it's fine because, you know, the game's over, but like for next time.
Yeah, for me, I'm like looking at a whiteboard that has an arrow pointing to Friends and I'm running the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, oh, if I'd only watched 20 years of Friends, I should just go back and
it's
do that
fine.
Really quick.
It's fun to not know what you're talking about sometimes.
I think that's fun, yeah. I kind of want to talk about like the form of the show. Like, Allie, I think you did an awesome move, just to start with compliments, of like, I think it's helpful when someone early on, maybe in the first couple scenes, says, let's do this.
Yeah.
Like, and you kind of went, oh, these three iconic places, let's go to them. Because then it was like, oh, cool. So we kind of have a sense of like this, the whole order of the show, because we can do those three things, then a few wrap-ups and we're done.
Right. I also like, I have learned more about like how we teach musical improv, which is a funny thing to say in retrospect, but it's truly because I lied my way into my first class that I didn't go into like, I never took the class. I was like, here's what a narrative improv looks like.
Yeah.
Like, here's the first scene should be the protagonist and they have want songs. Second scene should be the antagonist or the force against them. Third scene should be a charm scene. I like never got that education.
Yeah.
I sort of gleaned it from watching and doing shows, but I never like sat down and like was like, let's do that in class. So one of my favorite musical improv structures is like honestly what I would call like The Wizard of Oz, which is kind of what we did.
It's like a half hero's journey, half.
Yeah, it's like a hero's journey, but like everybody's on the same journey. We just discover we want different things.
Yeah,
I actually think that's a really effective way to tell stories that like I don't think it's taught in curriculum a lot of just being like we get taught that like if you have two people in this first scene and they both want the same thing, you have these redundant protagonists and how can the story possibly serve both of them, and like I strongly push against that. Like I really think like we all discover what we wanted when we got there. Like we found a long lost brother and we found the sandwich that makes you orgasm, and we like went through our midlife crisis because we're turning 35. Like I do think we didn't need to plan that ahead. We could just like believe that if we went fun places, we'd find ways to make these characters like learn things.
Yeah, and I think it leaves there's a certain element of prescriptiveness to a singular protagonist.
Yes.
In that no matter what it can be very rewarding to watch a single character grow and change, but improv struggles with characters growing and changing.
Yeah.
Because you can't grow or change too soon or else like the whole show sort of turns on its head.
Yeah. And like narrative structures, even at their core, are often about like pushing a character who refuses to grow and change through increasing challenges that ask them to grow and change, and then in the end they exhibit through action the change that they are meant to exemplify.
Yeah.
But like, none of that is like inherently funny.
Yeah.
So and it's kind of prescriptive. So it's like, I do think what I like about what you're saying, and we had a set for longtime listeners of the pod, by which I mean 3 weeks long listeners of the pod. We had a set like that 2 weeks ago where it was all these people going to a wedding to steal the wedding, but it was three of them. And then they each got caught along the way with different wants and needs. And it creates something I like in both this set and that set of like, who knows?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know what your wants are. It's good to have wants because you can build scenes around wants, but it's also good to kind of be like, I don't know,
let's
we're in a location.
Find out.
Yeah.
And let's find our want organically through kind of play.
Go ahead. I think it also helps take a little bit of pressure off. Like, when you're in a first scene, it feels like, okay, here I am in the first scene and I need to say everything. Who I am, where I am, what I want, who are all these people, what's our relationship to each other? And like, I can think of a really fun example of a Rumpelteazer show I did an eternity ago where I was playing like kind of a protagonist in that I was like the heiress to some sort of construction company, some like cement or like, you know what I mean? Something silly like that of being like, I'm the heiress to cement. And I'd been left at the altar by somebody else who was the heir to another construction thing. It was supposed to be like an amazing like merger, sort of Game of Thrones style.
Yeah.
And I went on a journey to go find him. But two people came with me, and they clearly, their purpose wasn't necessarily to find the fiance, but along the way were learning things and set these like unbelievably simple, stupid goals for themselves. One of them, Hannah Solo, who is the best person in the world, best musical improviser, you should look up Hannah Solo. All she wanted to was to learn how to count above three. And so every time we went places, she kept encountering ways to get to three and no further. And then finally, by the end of the show, her big thing was she learned how to count in Shreks. Don't ask. But at the end of the show, she goes, four Shreks. And I swear to you, you can see it in the video of the show, standing ovation. Nobody cared what the protagonist was doing. It was all about this woman learning how to count to four Shreks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't, you know what I mean? Like, you can't be like, okay, I've got my perfect game move.
That's more like, you can, that's why I think really good wants are like a game. They're not necessarily like,
I have to change the world.
Yeah, so many wants are like, they have this hugeness to them that is so heavy in your show, whereas it's like, that is a game.
Yeah.
Like, that's more of a game, and it's like, it's good that it was a side character, because like, four scenes about,
not being able to count to three.
Is hard.
But it was the perfect antidote to the more earnest sort of like, I have to find him. What if he didn't love me after all? It was like the perfect thing.
Well, it's also funny because it's like when you have...
Sorry, I'm turned away from you.
Yeah, I was like...
I just
kind of like swiveled. It wasn't on purpose.
When you have a want like that, it's fun to be able to explore it in different places. Because I think a lot of times people will be like, the timeline of the show is the character wants something and they get what they want and the show ends. And it's very interesting. I think we talk a lot about like, okay, the character, I mean, like Ashley has said this before in some of our stuff together, where it's like the character got what they want and then what happens? Like, what do we see? How has the world changed? How has other characters around changed? And so it's, I think to your point about it being sort of prescriptive, it's like, it's fun and interesting to be able to like play a game in a different setting or in a different time period or with different people. And I felt like that this had some fun play where it was just like, let's follow the fun little, the little coin in the fountain. I'm doing a gesture for the people who are listening, like dropping a coin in a fountain and seeing the little reverberations and then being like, okay, let's walk away from the fountain and let's look at something else.
I don't have a regret, but the thing I always find difficult about moving improv from stage to any other medium is physicality.
Yeah.
I feel like
I struggle with that today.
I struggle with that always. And like, there were so many moments where I was like, if we were on stage, this could have been such a fun stage picture of like the brother looking in while Chandler was looking out. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, how do you try and paint that picture with your words? Also just like, you know, like my when I think about improv and I'm like dreaming big, like I want to do a set where there are a bunch of tables set up, a bunch of chairs set up around the stage, and when we are being all the women eating the pastrami and riot katsu,
they're sitting in those
chairs. We're like popping around, and like I do like to be exhausted at the end of an improv show.
When we've done improv together, that's like what it's like. It's a lot of like us playing a lot of characters.
Or just like group ownership of characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always sort of regret, but it's always a thing that I wish I could do more of in settings like this, where I'm just like, oh, I wish I could show you what I wanted to do by going over there, but I can't.
I think that's, I mean, of all the regrets you could have, that's a good one. It's like, my imagination is just so full.
My imagination wants me to be sweatier.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it does.
Yeah. I love that. Is there anything you guys are like thinking a lot about these days? Like what, when you're thinking about musical improv as a form or like something you're growing in, is there an area that you're like, you know, if you ask a musician, what are you working on? Mm. Like, what are you working on?
As a individual or being like, this is a big thing I'm thinking about for the grand picture of musical improv.
Let's start with individually what you're thinking about as players.
Mm. You got one of those?
I need to think about it, I think. I found myself playing a lot of the same types of characters right now. Like, I like to come to these shows from like a very strong character perspective, just because it helps me like let loose and feel a little bit more like taking big swings and kind of, I always talk about like explode off the back line. Like, if you have an idea, it's like your job to serve the idea and to like explode off the back line. And I find it easier to do that when I'm playing characters, but I found myself kind of playing similar energy characters. And so I'm trying to sort of think more actively at the top of shows about like, what can I do here that's different, that still serves my skills, but that is like something new and interesting and exciting. Hmm. Which is very hard. It's really easy, especially when there's so much happening up in your brain of like, okay, the music and the scene work and the choreography, hopefully, and who's who and names. The first thing to go for me is like, all right, well, I'm going to use the same three voices that I kind of know to do. And I'm really trying my best to like actively push against that.
Yeah. I am really trying to get better about setting really clever and memorable choruses. People in LA...
Love a chorus.
They're really good at it too.
Yeah.
A lot of
wordsmiths. A lot of people doing like really fun wordplay or double meanings that can come back in another way. Like, I admire that so much, and I don't think I've really trained my brain to think of that. And so when I see people here nail it, I'm like, oh damn, I really should get better at that. Especially because like, I don't love opening numbers always. I usually sort of take a back seat in an opening number. I don't know why. I just don't love opening numbers. So I'm also trying to like be more participatory in opening numbers, including like setting a chorus. Mm. Especially a chorus that I feel like has legs that could like come back later in like the final scene and mean something else, or we can find a new twist on that wordplay or something. My brain isn't inclined to go there, so I'm really trying to like get better at that as a muscle.
Hey, who, what, when, where, why?
That was me really
exactly.
trying.
Yeah, really thinking.
I was really trying. I was like, I was listening to you and being like, I'm going to set the chorus for this.
Yeah.
And I knew I wanted it
I
to be something
get it
a little
at first.
Bit.
I admit, I was like, what is this?
Yeah, just because he's always like, could I be?
Yeah, no, I eventually, yeah.
And so I was like, that was my best. I was just like, I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
So if that was successful, drop a comment. And if it wasn't, drop a comment.
Like and subscribe.
The other thing that I am really thinking about in general with musical improv when I'm coaching specifically, because I think it is something I'm trying to think about always, but it's my big MO, is I was like, there are two muscles and you do have to work both of them. This arm is like exploration. It's the muscle that is happy to ask questions, go places, take risks, just sort of say what you're feeling. Like, there has to be an exploration muscle. And then there's also this arm, which is sort of like the playable game pattern of behavior muscle. But a lot of people have one muscle much stronger than the other, and they really do have to be equally strong. There are some people who are amazing at like finding, framing, and playing game, but they don't explore enough, and so the game gets really thin and really narrow, and you just sort of start saying the same things over and over, and sometimes you even said the best stuff before the song even starts because you're so good at playing game, and the song starts, and you're like, I am fully out of ideas here. And then there are some people who are amazing at explore, who are like have big imaginations and pitch weird characters and respond in character in a really unusual way, but then don't focus enough on game and just sort of keep exploring and wandering. And we end up like in worlds where we've had 10 premises before the song even starts. And so it's like, that's my number one thing with coaching, is like trying to make exercises and make teams feel aware that like both of these muscles have to be equally strong and work in tandem.
Yes. It really resonates with me as a coach as well.
Yeah.
Coach, especially, I think, because there are also a lot of teams out here that are newer and are just learning how to balance
right.
those muscles.
It's tough. That is not an easy thing.
No,
like,
I'm still working on it.
I'm saying it cavalierly. Like, so anyway, just do that. But it's like, that takes a lot of work. But
yeah, but there's like a world at like indie shows and stuff where I would rather see someone fumbling really badly through a verse where they're saying what they were saying in the scene 2 seconds ago. Do you know what I mean?
When you would rather see?
Yeah, I'd rather see someone fumbling through a song trying to say what their character wants to say instead of saying everything their character wants to say and then doing a song where they have nothing to say.
Yes,
like,
I
want to see someone struggle through, not I want to see someone struggle through, but I'd rather see someone struggle through trying to musicalize their thought and their feeling as opposed to saying all the technique and then having nothing to go off and saying the same four words.
I catch myself doing, I think it happened in this show just as a point of reference for a listener is like, We were just starting the street interview thing, and I started to, you were like, I think you even queued it up, you were like, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, I'll do this, and I was like, wait a minute, no, I'll sing it.
I was like, hold on,
I don't need to tell you.
Sing the fun stuff.
Well, and it's great too, like when that happens, for me at least, I feel a lot better taking swings when someone else takes swings. I mean, like that's just how improv works, but it's like you doing that. Immediately for me, I like unclench and I go like, okay, we're having fun. Like the more big swings and the more kind of like falling in you do, the more fun it is. And I felt like that fun sort of game was a turning point, at least for me feeling like relaxed into the set of being like, I know what we're doing. I know what's fun. I know what's funny. Now the rest is just like, let's just knock it down.
Yes. It's funny also, we had a lot of info at the top.
Yeah.
It's just a longer interview than I usually do up top, but I also was just genuinely curious about your relationship and your lives, so I wanted to just chat more. But then it was like narrowing in, like you said, it's like we explored, and then it's like, okay, wait, we have to like plant a flag about something.
Yes.
Because we could, you know, we even were like pitching out. We were like, it could be like company. It could be like this. It could be like that. So it's like, let's just like...
Let's go and see.
Yeah, let's just go figure it out. We've done enough exploring.
Yeah.
I think, like, the greatest feeling, and in turn, I feel like, honestly, like, the greatest compliment is when, like, if you're playing with somebody for the first time and you're like, hey, oh my God, so nice. I'm so excited to play with you. Like, this will be so much fun. When they, like, when a person after a show was like, that was so much fun. Like, I felt really safe. I, like, looked into your eyes and I was like, we got each other. That's, I think, maybe the best. I think it's, like, the best feeling in the world. I think it's, like, the high that all improvisers are chasing. But I do also, like, I take that as, like, the highest compliment.
Totally.
When people are like, oh, my God, we stepped out for the song. I knew it was crazy. But I just didn't see fear in your eyes. So I didn't have fear. And it's like, yes.
Yeah.
We bonded.
You're both holding the net that is going to catch the other person.
Yeah.
Our friend Hannah, the first time you and I played together, and this was our, I think, second time ever playing together.
Yes.
But our friend Hannah said, I predict that you and I would play similarly. And then I was like, yeah, maybe. And then I remember going to step forward to play a janitor who was washing the lockers. And before my foot hit the ground, you were stepping forward to be a janitor who washed the lockers. And I was like, wow, it's true.
Madison was right.
It's true.
Yeah, we do have a similar play style. Earnestness too. I think.
I love earnestness. I think earnestness is very underrated in musical improv. We have to remember it is a musical.
Yeah. Yes. And if it gets too... I think, you know, talking about my own things I'm working on, I think without the physical grounding of a location, it's something I'm working on this pod, I know things can get goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, you could probably feel it when we were doing it. It's like, we were having so much fun, but it's like, because it's all talk, it so quickly becomes like, wordy, mouthy. And so you have to like, I saw you do it at one point, and it was a good cue for me too of like, like, that was fun.
Right.
It was fun to all riff on that thing for a second. But we do want to keep, like, actually playing the show.
Yeah.
Not just, like, shiny objecting.
But it is easier on stage. It is easier
also,
in a space. You can move.
In space,
totally.
And also people are saying ha-ha and clapping.
People are saying ha-ha and clapping.
I mean, we're laughing at each other, which is great. And genuinely, like, I kind of forgot that there isn't an audience laughing, which is, like, a very good thing to feel. But it is, like, you know, there's that thing of, like, you're doing it and you're listening to and responding to what's happening. And so you really have to, like, rely on each other to be like, are we going to make each other laugh? Are we going to lock in?
Yes. Yeah. And that's a good point I actually hadn't thought about, surprisingly enough. Like, pacing-wise... You know, it can be like funny line, funny line, funny line, funny line, funny line. And there's no break to like laugh, which then it's just like the speed of everything speeds up, which I think is part of why sometimes it can be like breathless.
Totally.
Yes.
To do improv on a podcast.
It is nice when you like hear, when you hear an audience enjoy something and you know you can relax into that moment for a bit and like see if you can like get another beat of it or push it or like something physical. I don't know, like. I'm making up a fake example, but it feels true, and I'm sure people have seen it. You know, it's like the person who comes on to like be the waiter, and they like, you know, fumble with the glass a little, and then they get a laugh from the audience, and then they're able to do that like six more times and get laughs every time. But it's like you don't know what people are enjoying unless there are people.
Yeah.
And it also gives the whole scene a little a fresh breath of air because a new funny thing happened that wasn't the initial game and premise that we're tiptoeing around. It's like it can be very helpful. Yeah.
Tell me about this thing you didn't say, which was what you're hoping for out of the musical improv, both of you, what you're hoping for out of musical improv as a form, because we were talking more about like what we're working on individually, but I'm curious what, you know, obviously you're in LA, but you've both been in New York.
Yeah.
Those are the two major metros, I'd say, for musical improv. So we've seen a lot of it. What's on your mind in terms of like raising the ceiling or...
Okay, my personal desire is, as a lover of musicals, I want people to treat musical improv more like musicals.
Not meaning that
it can't be funny. Like, I want it to be, I think the beauty of musical improv is that it can be as stupid as what we just, like, as insane and stupid as what we just did, but also sung beautifully and acted earnestly, and the songs have purpose and dramatic tension. It's like, I'm always a little annoyed when I see a musical improv show, especially a narrative one, where too many songs are just sort of like, I'm the guy who cleans up the poop. And you're like, okay, well, that's the whole song? That would never be in a musical. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're allowed to have one. We can have one guy who cleans up the poop song. But like, I want to see shows that feel like musicals.
Yeah.
Which involves some people just sort of sucking it up and admitting that they like musicals.
Yeah.
You feel like there's a sort of sense of detachment, wanting to just be funny.
Yeah.
And musical improv just happens to be the way they get to be funny.
Yeah,
as opposed to engaging with the form as a form.
I don't fuck with that. I am not saying you have to be even good at singing. Some of my favorite musical improvisers are not very good at singing. They don't really harmonize. They sometimes have difficulty even like staying in the same key. It has really nothing to do with musical prowess. It's the commitment to being in a musical.
Yeah.
And it happens to be the funniest, most freewheeling musical you've ever seen because it's being made up.
Right.
That is the hill I wanted, that I will die on.
Yeah. What about you, Marty?
Yeah, I mean, my answer, I always said that I wanted to teach like a workshop called Just Be in a Musical, !! You know, like a new musical. But yeah, similarly, like really leaning hard into genre, singing in character for me is like a big thing. Like, I want to hear people. I love to sing in character. Like, I love to sing in a voice that is not my own and stretch my own range, but I want to hear people doing that too. I love when people do that. I love when people explore new forms. Like, I'm very interested in unusual forms and not just like narrative structures or not. I have an indie team that does a form night every month called Ant Hill. And we do a show one Friday a month that we explore.
Plug it.
It's called Ant Hill's Deck of Forms.
Whoa.
Oh, I think it's on the second Friday of every month.
I think it's on the second Friday of every month.
It's great. It's a great indie show. And we are a fun team who love to have new indie teams or mashup teams, and it's a place to come explore form like in a safe way where we'll take like a regular, again quotes, regular improv form like a Herald or Evente or
Monoscene,
and we'll musicalize it, and we'll sort of like ask ourselves and our teams that are performing like what make this successful as a regular form, and then how can we musicalize it. And it's like a very joyful sort of exploration of like, how is the form being served? And sometimes the answer is like, no, that was not that fun to do as a musical. But sometimes really fun stuff can happen from it. And so like, I would love to see some more play like that, of just people kind of being like, fuck it, let's like develop our own form, or let's throw something at the wall and see what sticks.
You want to see more experimentation.
I do, just because I think experimentation will also lead to musical experimentation, which will lead to character experimentation, which will lead to like deeper, bigger leaps, I think.
Yeah. One of the things I've really been enjoying about coaching and seeing a lot of new players, there, you know, I've been doing this in LA for 10 years, and pre-pandemic, there were like, you know, there were kind of like 20. I mean, there were really like 60, but there were really like 20 that would show up to everything.
Yeah.
And I was one of those 20. And so it was like, we were, I knew those people's voices comedically really yeah. well. And there was this sense that it's like, one day we'll get up there and mm-hmm. get to do the gig. And then our voices will be part of the thing. And it's been really fun, this injection of like, you know, 150 new
yeah.
comedic voices means as a coach and as a viewer, I'm just like seeing things that 5 years ago I wasn't seeing mm-hmm. because it's not from the same 19 people. It's just, that's the joyous part is like, oh, you have a world perspective I had never heard of or seen because you're you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what keeps me going back to like indie shows that have nobody at them, even like on a Tuesday night.
It's genuinely some of my favorite shows to do.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure coaching musical improv here because, whoa, did you move me?
I was just rotating you so I could see you.
That was crazy. I was like, I feel like we're getting an earthquake. It's been a pleasure coaching musical improv here because people are so good. And so I feel like I am coaching a lot of like very high level teams that are just like honing their taste and their skills, but like have really the basics down, which is a pleasure. But my goal for myself forever and ever is I never want to stop coaching beginners. I think if you can coach beginners and you can like find ways to take big, broad concepts and make them very simple, you will remain a great teacher. It's that same thing of like almost like that thing of like once you get really used to some people's perspectives and voices, you get a shorthand with them, notes get easier, blah, blah, blah. But like when you're meeting brand new people who are like 101 and you're really trying to get them to understand a huge broad concept like character or agreements or framing, I think if you can do that, you'll like always stay sharp. And so like, it's very when you were saying just like there's this constant injection of new people. I'm like, thank God, because like we always need beginners, and yeah. I think even pros need beginners. Do you know what I mean? It's like everybody needs beginners. Beginners are like a healthy part of the ecosystem.
Yeah, they help. They also help remind my fear around improv is that around musical improv is that as it becomes more popular, it will become more flat and become more like. I don't know, like this is how you do a narrative show.
Like homogenous?
Yeah, homogenous or like prescriptive in the same way that like, God, have I seen a lot of bad heralds? Like yeah. In part because the herald can be a very prescriptive form.
Yeah.
And so much time spent people talking about heralds is like, how do we make it not like every other herald?
It's
and
like, it's going to look like every other herald because it's a herald.
Yeah, it's going to look a little bit like that because it's pretty prescriptive as a form. And I'm like, why would we be at the like helm of a new creative form? And I mean, I know why, it's to teach.
Yeah.
Because like when you teach a lot of people, you need structure and but the downside of structure is homogeny. Mm-hmm. And so that's the balance is like, you know, you want everyone to learn and you want everyone to have the same language to talk.
Yeah.
But you don't want that language to then mean people's brilliance gets boxed into the words they use.
Right. That's also like what I was saying about being like, well, why can't we have three protagonists?
Yeah.
It's like, I know that the note, if somebody just saw that first scene and nothing else, they might be like, oh, well, I have some concern because like all three of these protagonists seem to want the same thing. And it's like, don't worry.
Yeah. We're smart. We're funny.
We'll be fine. And also like, there are so many ways to tell stories. There's not only one way to tell a story. Like there is a way to tell a story and it's pretty successful. So if you're looking for something and you're like fumbling in the dark, let's go with a hero's journey. But like, nobody needs to feel that they must do that. That's the only way to do a show.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We talk about that a lot, I feel.
Yeah. We talk a lot about improv.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, is this your car talk?
Yes.
Yes.
Car talk is improv talk, absolutely. And then we get closer to home and we go, I can't believe we're going to see our cat soon.
Yeah. Okay. We go, what do you think Wesley's doing right now?
Yeah, it's a lot of that.
Hell yeah. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we say goodnight?
Our cat is named Wesley.
Mm-hmm. He's very beautiful and gray and white.
He's very nearly 6 years old.
It's almost his birthday. His birthday comes out.
Birthday gift.
That's enough. That's enough about the cat. I'm not that interested, frankly.
He's really cute, actually. If you saw a picture, you'd change your mind.
I think not.
What else? Anything?
I don't think so.
I love musicals, and I hope that everyone who's listening to this loves musicals, and I hope that everyone will go listen to a musical that they have never heard before after this. That's my wish, that you go and look up what it was like. what was.
You want to recommend something?
I would go listen to A Strange Loop. If you've never heard that, I would listen to How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. I don't know. I'm just going through the eras. I know. I'm just going through eras, like, of what's interesting. I mean, I think
you?
A Chorus Line.
A musical. This is a new thing we've never done.
A Chorus Line is one of the best musicals of all time.
True.
You should listen to that.
The best musical of all time.
Watch the documentary Every Little Step.
After this, we'll talk about A Chorus Line because I don't really love it.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Okay, interesting.
We'll get in the car and talk about it.
I'm going to pitch that people listen to the original Broadway cast recording for Kiss of the Spider Woman, which was a late game Candor and Ebb musical. This is in the 90s. Cheetah Rivera was in the original Broadway cast. The music is phenomenal, and there's about to be a movie adaptation with Jennifer Lopez
and Tova.
Yes.
I think is their name.
Tovatia.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We went to school together.
Really?
Yeah. I wasn't sure if they used Tova or Tovatia.
Yeah, so it's a mononym.
Yeah.
Apparently a breakout star performance.
I would believe it. Tovatia is really good.
So cool.
They were great when we were in school.
I'm asking people to listen to this musical because apparently a lot of songs were cut for the movie in order to make the movie a little bit more like in the style of like the Chicago movie where musical numbers only take place in fantasy.
Sure,
none of them are non-diegetic of me just being like, these are my thoughts and you're hearing my thoughts. Like, it's only diegetic.
Right.
So a lot of great songs are going to be cut.
Yeah, so you're saying listen to the full thing.
Yes.
So that you can experience it that way.
Right,
before
because
you
then
watch
when you
the
watch
movie.
The movie, you won't hear the
or
day
even,
after that.
Or even watch the movie and then I really urge people to listen to the Broadway cast recording. Just because, like, there is some really special music.
Yeah.
It's one of my very favorite scores.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing this.
This was a blast. Thank you for having us.
Do you want to recommend a musical?
Do I want to recommend a musical? I mean, if you just listened to this and you haven't listened to Company, that'd be a really funny thing to go listen to now. And then go watch the making of the Company
so
doc, and then go watch the co-op.
Yes.
Yeah, the co-op parody
of
the
Company.
The documentary
company.
Now.
Yeah.
That's
episode.
My recommendation to anyone. Like, I know at any point that I'm dating someone, I will eventually show them that set of things.
Yeah, that's
like,
me.
This
with,
is kind of my personality.
That's me with my parents anytime I go home. I'm like, well, what if we watch this episode of the documentary now again?
Yeah, they like documentary.
They like that
now.
One, yeah. And the Chicago one with the band is really good, too.
Yeah. Hell yeah. All right, bye, guys.
Thanks for having us. Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.